A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 3, 1996, in the series The Will of God in Human Action, entitled The Struggle to Discern the Will of God. The scripture readings are Genesis 50, verses 15 through 21, and Luke 4, verses 1 through 13. The text for the sermon is Luke 4, verse 12. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It was sometime toward the end of last year that someone brought in an article from the Wall Street Journal. One of their adult children in another part of the country had sent it in, and they carried on a discussion with their parents about an article by Arthur Schlesinger, which indicated Schlesinger's amazement at how many people spoke about God speaking directly to them. I think that indeed this was a real Gallup poll. One-third of Americans say that God speaks directly to them. And Schlesinger said, "Am I the only person for whom that is a scary statistic? What do they mean? How does God speak to them?" And the article was lying on my desk when, in the first week of January, I was thinking about my Lenten preaching, and I was struck by the fact that there are so many, it would seem, who let those words trip off their tongue, "God spoke to me," when Jesus so struggled to discern the will of God. And so the will of God and human action became the theme for this Lenten journey in the first week of January. And today, the struggle to discern the will of God with the scripture lessons that were read was set in the first week in January. I tell you that lest you think that I determined my text and theme after last Thursday night. It just isn't true. But it does indicate how this ancient story can come alive in our experience. But the real issue in our Lenten pilgrimage is how one lives in the tension between the will of God that one would seek to determine and human action and human willing that is upon us daily. How do we discern the will of God in our human journey, where we are called upon incessantly to decide and to act? I want to say very simply to you this morning that it is a very complex and difficult problem. And anyone who can so easily say, "God spoke to me," I think hasn't wrestled really with the depth of the dilemma that that situation faces us with. I read the temptation stories this morning, Jesus in the wilderness, not to address that at all, but simply to indicate the gospel portrait of Jesus as one who in his very genuine humanity struggled. He struggled with temptations. Who am I? What is God calling me to do? It wasn't easy for Jesus. And we'll continue throughout these Sundays in Lent, for example, to see him in the garden when he said, "Not my will, but thine be done." Next week, on the cross, when having sought fully to follow the will of God, he cried out in dereliction, my God, why?" Dear friends, it is a struggle to discern the will of God. When we speak of the will of God in human history, we are speaking really about the providence of God as it has been proclaimed in the history of the church and Israel The idea that in the course of history and through the unfolding of the cosmic drama, God is engaged, God is involved. But how? To what extent? My old professor used to speak about God giving creation elbow room. And the human person is also an agent of will and action. And so how does the human person, how do we discern the will of God, believing that our lives would be lived most fully if we could find that will and bring it to expression? The Joseph story is the classic biblical story of the providence of God. It's a familiar story. Joseph, kind of a young prig, the favorite of his father, spoiled rotten, offending his brothers. His brothers, driven to violence, sell him into slavery. He has a terrible experience in Egypt, landing in prison. Tragedy stalks his steps until what would seem to be a fluke of fate. He is brought to royal attention and given the job of prime minister. And when a famine develops in his homeland, his brothers come, he arranges food for them, eventually reveals himself to them, eventually has them bring his old father, and there they settle, and he takes care of them, and then daddy dies. And the brothers say, he probably was just merciful to us as long as dad was alive. Maybe we better go and tell him that dad said, when I'm gone, forgive your brothers. And so they came and they fell down before him, weeping, pleading for mercy. And Joseph said, don't do that. Do you think I am in the place of God? I know you intended evil for me, but God intended good. And in that story, which probably has a core of history, but really is a saga, is really one of the great stories that Israel told as it gave expression to its confidence that history doesn't just go willy-nilly on its way, but somehow or other, hidden within, God is involved, God is engaged, and history's not an accident about to happen, but is a process that has a meaning and a goal, all of which is a part of a tapestry that God with us is weaving. That was Israel's faith, and it is biblical faith. The Christian church has taken that over from Israel. And the fortunate thing about Israel is that it told stories. It didn't spin abstract doctrines, as we have tended to do in Protestantism especially. But it told stories. And in this story of Joseph, let me just lift up a couple of ideas. For one thing, it's like I said in the beginning, it is not easy to discern the will of God operative in this process we call history. There is no direct one-to-one. Anybody says, there's God and that event was God's doing, is claiming more than one can claim. The church hasn't been very honest about that, and a lot of preachers like myself have promised more than we could deliver. It's not that simple, folks. You can't just see the footprints of God in the sands of time. God is indirect in God's engagement with our lives and our history. God, in other words, doesn't meddle. History is not a puppet show, and we're not automatons on a string. If it were simply a case of God in omnipotence controlling things, Why was Jesus crucified? Why the Holocaust? Why all of the bad things that happened to good people? Clearly, however God is involved, it's not directly in a one-to-one relationship. And furthermore, it's obvious that within the course of history, everything that happens is not ordained by the will of God. It was not God's will that Joseph was a spoiled brat. It wasn't God's will that his brothers should react violently against him. It wasn't God's will that old Jacob would have been brought to such grief. It wasn't God's will that hundreds, thousands perhaps, died of famine. The bad things that happen within the space that is creation's and that is history's, and we simply cannot say that everything that happens is the will of God. That's a popular cliche. You'll hear it out in the street. It's kind of a comfort, but it's a security blanket that will really, on reflection, give no real solace. There are things that happen all the time, contrary to the will of God, in terms of God's desire for well-being for humankind, in terms of God's purpose for the whole cosmic order. And so that causes me to say that from the story, the providence of God, as we learn it in this story, is something we can speak of only in retrospect. In retrospect, looking back over our shoulder, then sometimes one can say, you know, that event back there that seemed so meaningless, so senseless, was a turning point in my life. Looking back over our shoulder, we might find some comfort and some joy even in those things that at the time left us dumb, speechless, bewildered, feeling betrayed. Joseph could talk after the fact. Looking back, then he gave expression to his confidence that his contorted way had nonetheless woven through it a good purpose which God had for him and for his people. And that leads me to say that if we're going to believe in the engagement of God and the involvement of God somehow or other in the stream of our history, then it can only be a God who is able to work with the good and the evil, the light and the darkness. Then it is a God not controlling with sheer power, but moving, nudging, beckoning, pleading, offering a greater grace from beyond us that engages us in ways we cannot fully understand. It is then a God who uses the stuff of our lives, the ingredients of our lives, the light and the shadow in the weaving of the tapestry, so that one, when everything goes well, and when nothing goes well, waits upon the Lord and says, nevertheless. Now that's trust. Do you want me to prove it to you? I can't prove it to you, can I? That's trust. The very nature of trust is that I cling, even in the darkness, to something that I feel down here and cannot resolve up here. Fortunate the person who has been given that gift, that grace of a fundamental trust that enables them in life's billows and on smooth seas to trust in that grander purpose, that greater grace. William Cowper, the English poet, hymn writer, was a melancholy chap. He had seasons of depression, experienced the dark night of the soul, often depressed. And in the ingredients of his life, he wrote one day, God moves in mysterious ways, God's wonders to perform. God plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. It's a marvelous metaphor, isn't it? Wonderful image. Did you ever see a footprint in the sea? Of course not. There's a nice little writing that perhaps some of you have as a plaque somewhere on one of your walls that talks about footprints in the sand. It's a lovely little piece. But if I'm to be honest with you, the footprints of God are not in the sands of time to be traced by the likes of us, to claim with absolute certainty, God said, God did. The footprints of God are planted in the sea. It is our God who rides the storms of life. And the one who believes down here in the providence of God is one who simply trusts that in spite of the evidence. In every circumstance, waiting upon the Lord, believing that in the long run, in the big picture, God's intention for us all and for this whole creation is good. Is it any wonder that the God who plants footsteps in the sea, in the great cosmos that God created, is now spoken of by our leading scientists in terms of chaos theory? That which to us appears simply chaos. We're told by some of the most penetrating minds of our day, nonetheless, embraces a pattern, though untraceable, yet surely there. The old Heidelberg Catechism in the Providence of God question answers that the providence of God enables us to be thankful in prosperity. In other words, it's not my right arm that hath gotten me this. Thankful in prosperity, knowing that all is grace, and patient in adversity, knowing that this too, the good and gracious God, can turn to our good. It's a struggle to discern the will of God. But in the meantime, with Julian of Norwich, we can be sure all will be well, all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. Thank God.